So in late 2025, and you may have heard this already, but only a few months ago, there was an artist named Solomon Ray. Solomon Ray reached the number one charts on iTunes, Billboard, things like that, for two new singles that he put out on iTunes and Billboard, as I said. Now, this wouldn't be a big deal. Obviously, there has to be someone in the number one spot. There has to be. That's why a list like that exists. Now, the problem in this case, or the interesting thing in this case, is that Solomon Ray isn't a person at all. Solomon Ray is a fully synthetic AI creation by someone, a human, named Christopher Townsend, who is also an artist. Now, once people started realizing that Solomon Ray was AI, it started to build this controversy. Christian artists, especially Christian human artists, started to speak out against this, and they started questioning, and it created a debate that exists to this day still about whether or not something created by AI can produce a sincere, Holy Spirit-filled encounter for the listener. And I think it's a really, really good question, and it kind of helps lead to some of these conversations that we've been having recently into this morning. AI is growing and changing, and in many ways is all around us. I've had conversations already this morning who have been talking about how they have used AI this week. It is impacting our lives. Now, for anyone to say that they're an expert in AI, except for perhaps a handful of people around the world who are creating AI, I think is a little bit foolish, a little bit uncertain, because AI is changing so rapidly and evolving all the time. And so it is hard to even talk about it, because by next week or next month, it will have adapted and changed. And so we admit this morning that we are in many ways just scratching the surface. Our hope isn't to prescribe specific rules or doctrines around AI, but rather, we're hoping that our conversation can lead to principles that we can live by no matter what happens down the road. And so with that, I want to introduce you to Leona, who's just been sitting here nicely. Thank you, Leona. Leona is a part of our Burlington community. She's a consultant. Leona works in culture and leadership and artificial intelligence. So Leona, I don't know if Leona would like to say that she's an expert. She's definitely has pushed back on that, but she is the expert in the room this morning. Sorry, Leona. Okay, so let's start with an easy question. Are we living in a simulation? Okay.
Well, I don't know.
All right. I guess we'll end with that one. All right. That's fine. All right. So as I've even described this morning, Leona, so often we hear that we interact with AI every day, whether we realize it or not. But is that actually true? What do people mean when they say that? Can you give me a simple definition of what AI is?
Oh boy. AI, simple. So to Mark's point, no, I wouldn't classify myself as an expert. I am not a godfather of AI. To me, those are the experts of AI. But I have spent the last year playing with it and integrating it into my business and training leaders to figure out how to integrate it into their businesses. And so, yes, I would say we use it every day. If you have autocorrect on your phone, you use it. If you have social media, you use it because there's algorithms. If you use Google Maps to get here this morning, you used it. So AI is prevalent in our day-to-day. It just is. Now, to describe AI, and I think this is why it can get really confusing, is we say everything is AI, but technically speaking, artificial intelligence is the umbrella term for everything that sits underneath that is AI. And there are layers and so many different products and features that sit under that. So we have a bit of a graphic here, and this is how I like to think about it. I like to think about it in the sense of our journey as human beings with AI. And where are we at in this journey? So the first column that you see there is artificial narrow intelligence. And any AI you use today falls into that category. We are currently using narrow intelligence. There's also this idea, and debated, artificial general intelligence. The we talked a bit about this. The idea that comes to mind when you think about AGI is the movie iRobot with Will Smith from 2004. Is that correct?
Great movie.
Okay. I think I've watched it. Tells you how much I love sci-fi. But that's kind of a good picture of what AGI is. It's general intelligence that's at the human level across multiple domains. We are not there yet. We are not using that AI. It's debated as to whether or not we'll get there in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years, in the next 50 years. We don't really know. But I would say that most of the Godfathers just say we're working towards that direction. Then we have ASI, which is superintelligence. This really is the stuff of sci-fi. It's the idea of AI smarter than human beings, completely smarter than human beings, and doing things beyond what we can imagine just in our human capacities. So we're not going to talk about AGI and ASI today. I think the key is really narrowing down on what is ANI and how are we using it. And so there's a couple layers just to think about that you've probably heard terms thrown around. The first is machine learning. So that's the learning method that AI uses in order to do and perform the way that it does. And then within machine learning, we have what we call generative AI. And that's just AI that can generate things, images, text, video, just really generates anything. And then within that we have LLMs, or large language models. That's another term that often gets used. And that is, think about LLMs as like a program, and each company has their own program. So if you use a tool like ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude or Perplexity, all of those, like OpenAI and ChatGPT, have their own LLM. So they train their large language model on vast amount of human text data in a way that it just literally predicts what comes next. And that's all it's doing. And that's why it's narrow AI. It's predicting the next word in a sentence. It's predicting the next sentence in a sequence of sentences. And it can do some pretty amazing things considering that that's a pretty simple task. And so then when we're engaging with these tools, when we're engaging with LLMs, like we can't, because that data is just really not accessible to human beings. Companies like OpenAI have created tools like ChatGPT or Perplexity or Claude that allows us to then access that data in a way that makes it accessible to us in a kind of conversational way. So that's as simple as I can get, Mark.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Well, that's not very simple, but that's okay. So essentially what you're saying is these programs that we might use, the average person here in the room might be using, and what we use is actually a translator or a program between what the actual AI is.
Yes.
The artificial intelligence.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Very helpful. So then what are some things that AI can do?
Well, I have fun with it this Christmas. I don't know. Do we have the image? I created a Christmas card. Those are my dogs. Well, those are not my dogs because they don't wear tuxedos at home. But those are both my dogs, Luke and Dubby, and so I just used the new image feature that came out on ChatGPT and gave it pictures of my dogs and gave it a prompt around the background I wanted, and this is what I got. And so we sent that out, the Regal Beagles.
So was it you or Mike who taught them how to hold cigars? That's what I want to know.
More Mike. that's just some fun ways that you can engage with it. I like custom tools, so I build a lot of custom tools, and that's where I help leaders. I built myself a custom running coach, and so I can go for a run, upload my running data, and it can analyze that data and tell me what I need to continue working on and where I can make improvements on my running and track my progress over time. And so within a lot of these platforms, you can customize, which is cool too. One of the other features that I really like is a product called Notebook LM. It's based in Google. Some of you may have heard of it. And what's really cool with this feature is you can upload a bunch of information into it, whether it's resources or research articles or just data that you have access to on a particular topic. And then that tool will take it and turn it into things, like turn it into an infographic or into PowerPoint presentation or into images. My favorite is it will turn it into an audio overview that sounds like a podcast. And so if I don't want to read, and we were doing some research for this conversation today, if I don't want to read 6 research articles on AI, I can put it into this tool and it will actually produce a podcast that I can listen to. And as an auditory learner, that just works much better for me. So let me see if I can actually do a bit of a demo here around what that would actually sound like. go. Oh, I don't need to put this because I'm plugged in. Yeah. Okay.
Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take your sources, peel back the layers of data, and find the real insights.
Today, we're diving into something that feels incredibly urgent.
It really does. We're talking about human connection. And this isn't just about feeling good. It's about survival, especially now as our digital world starts offering us these, you know, very sophisticated.
Oh, hey there.
Yeah, could we just dive into how this impacts young people?
That is a phenomenal question.
And it is completely necessary.
Absolutely, because the data shows that young people, this...
So the fun thing about this is that you can actually become part of the conversation. And you can interject and say, actually, I want to go this way. And it will take that data and revamp the conversation for you. And so I have found that really incredible from a learning standpoint, just in, I can put all this on here, go for a walk, listen to a podcast, and then kind of insert my questions and my insights as I go. So yeah, a couple of examples.
It's amazing. It can do obviously incredible things. And things that are helpful or fun or, you know, like seem good to do. So I think that's amazing. Now, people are calling AI the biggest disruption of our lifetimes. And we've heard that word lots, right? Things are being disrupted all throughout the past couple decades. Now, is that hyperbole? Is this the biggest disruption of our lifetime? What about, what is the actual impact or potential impact of AI in our lives? I think this is something we want to know. Is this just another internet and printing press, or is it more than that? How does this impact society?
Oh, that's a big question. But yes, it does. It's going to impact us. I think it already has. Mm. I think we can look back historically at how humanity has transitioned through the different tech eras. To your point, the printing press, there was a lot of fear around loss of oral memory. The internet brought on a whole lot of fears around losing us, becoming lazy, because now information was just at our fingertips. And AI will do the same thing. It just will. The thing about AI is that I think, and you and I have talked a bit about this, the exponential rate on change with it, I think, is what makes it feel that much more kind of anxiety provoking sometimes around the rate of change. But I think one of the areas that we're seeing some big impact is in healthcare. Mm. I would think that maybe in 5 years from now, most doctors will likely be using AI in their practice in order to give well-rounded care. Mm. My doctor asks me if AI can listen into our appointments. So it's already happening. There are some examples of where there's been research done. So in 2020, there were some researchers at MIT that used AI to survey a library of 61,000 molecules, FDA-approved drugs, and just natural products. And they discovered an overlooked molecule that they used to create the antibiotic called Holosun. And Holosun is an antibiotic that kills a bacteria that's been resistant to all antibiotics up until 2020. So really cool use and beneficial use for humanity with this tool. But then in 22, there were some researchers that ran a test using an AI system that was for drug discovery. And in a matter of hours, the system generated 40,000 molecules that could be used for known and new chemical warfare agents. And so I don't say that to create fear. It's just recognizing that these tools do what we design them to do. They're not moralistic. They can't tell the truth. They cannot lie. They just do what they do. And they have no moral compass for maybe I shouldn't unearth these molecules and I should only unearth these molecules. Okay. And so I think that that's the piece we need to remember with these tools, is that they are not moralistic. We are the human beings that not manage that, and that they are going to do what we design them to do.
Okay, yeah. Wow. So let's come back to that in a moment. And that reminds me, actually, you've mentioned this term, the godfathers of AI. Mm. So that's three people who essentially have created the foundation for AI. I think that's how they're referenced. And some of these people who are very serious people, the actual experts, one of them, George Hinton, for example, he left his job at Google in AI, one of the main creators there, in order to be able to speak freely about the risks themselves of AI. Stuart Russell, the guy who literally wrote the textbook on AI that anyone in the world learning about AI since the 90s would have used and still use to this day, he said he would press the button, if one existed, to prevent any future AI development. And many other people who have helped create AI have expressed quite strong concerns about AI and the future of our world. So should we, and you talked about this chemical warfare, and the AI is not moralistic. It doesn't know right from wrong. All it does is produce what it's told to produce. So should we be afraid of AI and the future impact? Are we headed towards some sort of dystopian future? Are we headed to a world where Terminator will show up one day? That's what I want to know.
Well, I think you highlight something, Mark, and that is... AI's here. Hmm. This isn't a conversation about whether or not we should use it or whether or not it's coming and preparing for its arrival. It's already here. Hmm. I mean, I come back to this example too. Like, let's move away from technology altogether. Hmm. Back in the day before we had furnaces, we had hearths. Is that hearth? It always turns into hearst on me for some reason. But hearth, the fireplace. And what was this, the fireplace was central to the family. It dictated roles. Mm. The women were predominantly the ones doing the cooking. The men were getting the firewood. The children were involved in certain care around that. But then also their patterns of how they came together. In the evening, everyone came together around that fireplace because that's where there was light. That's where there was warmth. Mm. And then the furnace came along. And that whole piece around coming together and connecting as a family and the patterns and the roles, that all changed. Would we say today, though, that we should get rid of our furnaces because that was a bad idea and it unearthed? No, because
not this
whole,
morning.
there's so many benefits, and it reduced workload, and it increased comfort, but the center changed, and so. You know, there's this. I kind of refer to it as like hearth habits. As we think about AI, and want to hold on to our humanity and what it means to be human, what are those like hearth habits we need to hold on to as everything around us accelerates? And there's a tendency to want to connect more with technology maybe than human beings. What are the habits we're holding on to that make us uniquely human that allow us to not be overcome by AI or outsourcing everything to AI?
I love that. This idea that we need to be more intentional as a result of changing technology, mm-hmm. not just AI, but any sort of technology. We need to be creating guidelines or intentional habits, whatever that means. And I just want to speak to as well, because this was helpful for me as I was doing research about this conversation and reading and hearing some of these people talk about AI, about perhaps a hopeless future. Right? Is there any hope with this new technology that's being developed? And I was reminded, again, of the verses in 1 Peter 3 and 4. And I think it's worth reading here together. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. And into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. I just think that is so amazing. When we talk about new technology or AI specifically, often it's this focus on loss or death or cold decay, right? That we're moving into a future that is one that is soulless, right? But here we're reminded that we have a living hope, right? That pushes back against death and loss and decay. We have a hope that is alive in us, that gives us purpose for the future. And I think that is integral to being human and to that human connection. So let's talk about our individual personal cost, right? So what is AI, what is the impact AI is having on us as individuals? Or is it having an impact on us?
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
I think that's an undoubtable yes. Yes, it's having impact. I mean, there's some terms that I've heard like cognitive obesity, this idea that our brains are becoming mushy because AI is just doing everything for us. And that is a reality if we do outsource everything to AI, if we just behaviorally what we know of human beings. We like the path of least resistance. And so we just need to be cognizant, I think, of that. And so there are certain things that I do not outsource to AI. I don't outsource decision-making to AI. I even when I'm using it within my business, I always hold the context and the nuance of the situation that I'm asking it to build something around. I don't just let AI make assumptions about those things. I don't offload to AI my lived experience and the value of that and my expertise. And so I think those are the pieces that we need to remember to hold on to when we're coming to these tools. They're really helpful and they can do beautiful things. But we need to make sure that we're giving it the context it needs to perform accurately, but that we're also not just saying, well, AI said that, so that must be right, and then negating my professional experience that would say, well, no, actually, that's probably not the way we want to go here. So yeah, remembering that our humanness is of more value at the end of the day than what these tools do for us.
Okay, well then let me ask you this, and I think this is relevant to all of us either watching online or here in the room. And this, to me, is actually a shocking thing. So the number one use of AI right now isn't creating Christmas cards, I know, surprisingly, or songs, right, like we heard earlier in the service, or even doing our work for us. Okay, these are things that people are using AI for all the time, but it's not even close to the number one use. The number one use of AI is companionship. Mm-hmm. Companionship. In fact, research suggests that up to 72% of teens use AI for companionship. 72%, almost three quarters. They prefer it to real humans, right? As friends, therapists, even romantic relationships. Now, that says to me that clearly what hasn't changed in our lives as a result of technology is the desire for connection. People are still reaching out. They're reaching out just to AI. So what can we do about that? What is that about?
Well, yeah. I mean, though, I found those stats staggering as well, because I've never used it in that capacity. So when I saw that, it was wow. Between 2022 and the middle of 2025, the number of AI companion apps increased by 700%. So to your point, there is a desire for it, and there's a market for it. But it's also really, it's how it's marketed. It's marketed as like advisors, to your point, and companions and romantic partners. And these companions, and I think why we're so attracted to them as human beings, is because they're designed and they're programmed to agree with us and to affirm us and to tell us everything we want to hear.
That doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah, right? 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 Even if I'm in the wrong, my AI companion will tell me it's not my fault.
Yeah, that's nice.
Right? And so I think that right there becomes this big question. Is it really connection if it always affirms and agrees with you? And is it really connection if it doesn't have a soul? I don't know. That's what I come back to is like real, honest connection that can transform us. The other thing that's interesting, though, when we think about this in an epidemic of loneliness, that to me then doesn't surprise me that people are going to AI companions, but there's also recent research coming out of MIT that shows the higher the usage of chatbots, the higher the rate of loneliness.
Wow.
So it's not actually solving the problem of loneliness, which then I think speaks to why human-to-human connection and relationship is so paramount and matters so much.
Yeah, and it's so, that human-to-human connection, again, reminded in Galatians, where it says, carry one another's burdens, right? And in doing so, you fulfill the law of Christ. Carry each other's burdens. As we connect as humans, right, to carry each other's burdens mean that we are, it means that we're vulnerable, right? It means that we need to confess. It means that we need to know what's going on in our lives, in each other's lives. And in doing so, we walk together through hard things, right? Through those tough times of life. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is AI is not going to do that, right? It doesn't have the capacity to forgive. It doesn't have the capacity to understand confession or the benefits of suffering or hardship or waiting.
Well, and it doesn't have the capacity to help us to get to know ourselves better either. Like, God has made us to need others to know who we are. And you won't get that through an AI companion. No. So much of what I learn about who I am is because of an interaction I have with another person and the way that they respond to me. Hmm. And I learn about, ooh, that didn't land well, from a reaction from another person, not from, like, an AI companion, right? And so God has designed us for human-to-human and human-to-divine connection. Hmm. And AI is never going to supplement that.
Hmm. Amazing. Okay, so hearing all this, hearing about those staggering statistics, if I were a parent, if I was a parent of a teenager, how would you recommend that parents can help keep teens safe or help walk with them in this journey? And not just for parents or teenagers, but really for all of us. What does this mean? How do we walk safely with this new technology?
Well, just practically speaking, there are definitely more parental controls that are coming out on these tools. I think ChatGPT just recently released one early last year. Mm-hmm. So that's certainly one way. I think there's some age caps. I don't know how well that's managed, but you need to be 13 to have an account. In my opinion, that's still a bit young. But it's more than that, though. I think there's an element of how are you helping your children have human-to-human relationships? What activities are they involved in? Are they getting out to youth group? Do they hang out with their friends? How are you encouraging them to build those relationships with other human beings, or just family game nights? We can do this within just our families. Mm. It's just that opportunity to connect human to human, certainly. And then being a safe place for your children to come if they have questions about these things is always important. That doesn't mean you always say yes to your kids about everything that they want, but it's that conversation doesn't ever feel threatening. Mm. If they have questions about what it means or they get themselves into a bit of a pickle with it, sure. Because those are realities.
Yeah. Something I've been reminded of recently is, what does it mean to model healthy tech habits, right? As a parent, are you constantly on a phone? Are you constantly, is your first response to go to this as well? I think that could be a great way to model that as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and that reminds me actually of this, speaking of modeling, speaking of healthy tech habits, we've been talking this month about I've got my little paper here, digital rule of life. Right, this is something that we've been bringing up over and over because it speaks directly to this. It speaks directly to what we're talking about. And this week we're talking about point four, where we set simple boundaries. Right, we choose sustainable boundaries that protect what matters most. Right, so whether it's social media limits, no scrolling after a certain time at night, phone outside the bedroom. I think this is huge. Phone outside the bedroom, especially for teenagers who might be scrolling or diving into that companionship or those companion apps at night. News once per day, that's a huge one, right? Do not disturb at work or in your time of prayer. These are all simple things that each of us can do that I think help create boundaries around even what AI is and what it is becoming. Okay, so then as a Christ follower, let me ask this question. Is AI spiritually dangerous?
It depends.
Okay. So maybe, maybe yes, maybe,
maybe
no.
Yeah. I come back to the fact that we're all made in the image of God. And so what makes us image bearers? I think there are three things that make us image bearers. The first is our ability to reason, that self-conscious rationality and understanding of morality. The second, I would say, is ability to have relationships with other human beings and with God and with the Holy Spirit and with Jesus. And then also our role and our vocation. Like, what are we called to be responsible for and have authority over? And I think about Genesis 2, where we are called to care for what has been gifted to us and given to us. And I do think technology falls into that because we've used the resources of this planet that have been gifted to us to create it. Mm. And so in light of that and our image, being image bearers, I think AI's already here. So I don't lean into, maybe I'm just overly optimistic. I don't lean into wanting to be fearful of it. Mm. It comes back to the mm-hmm. conversation that we've had so far around stewarding it well, making good decisions around it, discerning well when we use it, verifying the outputs it produces, checking the sources, where did this come from? And the reality is we still need to do that even with our news today. Not AI, I guess I want to be careful that we don't start to feel like AI is maybe the onset, creating the onset of misinformation or the thing that we need to be scared of. I think sometimes it's maybe just highlighting what's already here and what we're currently dealing with.
Yeah, I've heard AI described as a mirror. All it is a reflecting either us or what is out there in society and culture. Okay, so then let me ask this. How do I know what's true? You talk about misinformation or disinformation. How do I know what's true when AI can create anything, as we've heard and seen this morning already?
How do we know anything's true?
How do we know anything's true? Great question, Leona.
But it's a fair question when we consider that over 70% of the images created on social media are AI generated. I use LinkedIn as my marketing tool just for my business, and over, I think it's 54% of the content there is LinkedIn or AI created. So yeah, there's this piece around needing to really discern was that actually real? And the videos, and maybe right now it's still easier because people sometimes only have three fingers in them, or there's something that's a bit off and quite obviously, and that's going to change as time moves. But I think maybe, and I wonder if the better question here is more to like, what is our responsibility? And how do we make sure that we're engaging in really good practices to check those things? We can ask these tools to disagree with us. Like, that is an option. And I build into my custom tools that they would hold me accountable on my biases and my assumptions, if I'm making any, based on the evidence that it has. Sometimes I will ask it to disagree with me. And one of the things that I found really beneficial is at the end of a particular output, I will often ask, highlight any and all assumptions you have made to produce this. And now what I can do is go through it and say, okay, yeah, no, that's accurate. That's pretty accurate. And for the most part, the assumptions are pretty accurate. And then I'll get one, I'll be like, ooh, whoa, I don't know where that came from. Now I go check it. And so there are kind of safeguards or things that we can do when we're using these tools as well to help us verify and vet and make sure that what it's producing is accurate. But the onus is on us to make that decision and not just to take verbatim what it gives us.
This blew my mind, actually. Don't assume what AI produces is true. Right, I think in the early days, I just assumed everything was accurate, at least. But that's just not the case. It makes things up. It produces wrong content.
And it hallucinates.
It hallucinates. Yeah. See, people aren't the only ones. That to me blew my mind. So as you said, our responsibility is to discern. Our responsibility as humans to be responsible for this technology is to discern what is true, what is not, and how to use it. So do you have any tips in helping us discern?
Trust your gut. I mean, at the end of the day, I think we're aware of what we're looking for when we go to these tools too. I think that's a big one, is coming to these tools with a clear idea of what you're looking for in the output. Coming to it very vaguely is going to produce more hallucinations because you're probably not going to give it enough context. You're not going to tell it enough about your audience or the tone you want it to use or these various pieces that can then help it really be specific and hallucinate less. The less information you give it, the more it's left to assume what the next word should be and what the next sentence should be. So engaging with these tools, it's important to give it as much information as possible, but be mindful of privacy. I don't mean your personal information, but if you're asking it to write a report, for example, give it all the information it's going to need to be able to do that well, like you would a junior intern. And that's how I look at these tools, is I think about them as an assistant or a junior intern. I need to train it. I need to double check what it's doing. I need to make sure that the output was correct and not just assume that it's doing everything accurately.
Yeah, and from a Jesus follower perspective, I would also add that as we learn to test the spirits, right? We spend time in prayer. We dive into scripture. We talk to close friends. Maybe you're a part of a life group. We ask God to reveal himself. Even as we learn to discern how to use this or if we should use it in a certain context, right? I would say these are the approaches that we can take, that we can add to the process that will help us along the way. Okay, so with all of this, hearing about the potential pitfalls and the potential help that AI can be, where do we engage with AI? Do you have a quick run-through, perhaps, of how we can engage with AI? Yeah.
Let's think go, slow, stop.
Perfect.
Okay, so go, foster your human connections, your human friends. Foster your relationship with God and with Jesus and with the Holy Spirit. And bring yourself into community. Any of the opportunities that you have to be with other human beings, I think, is paramount. And spend time and be intentional about those things. Where I would say be slow is with AI. And what I mean by slow is just discern and make judgment calls on it. Always use AI with like this lens of discernment and judgment. Always don't assume it's always correct. Double check what it's producing. Ask for sources. Ask where it got the information from. And you might find it can't find the website because it didn't use one. Or the website it pulled from is old and it's a Wikipedia page that maybe isn't that reliable. So verify your sources. And then the last one is be curious. Like at the end of the day, I think that can be the foundational one for this is just be like intrigued by what it can do and be like, oh, well, that's interesting. But how did you come to that conclusion? Where did that come from? And I think if we come at it with a posture of curiosity, it's going to open up that space to be more inquisitive and discerning with it. Where I would say stop is do not replace your human connections with it. Do not try and find your companionship there. I would say avoid it from a therapeutic standpoint or for therapy. Find a qualified therapist or discipleship for that matter. Mm-hmm. I think discipleship is something, again, that happens in community and happens relationally between people. So those would be my kind of three key areas on that.
It's amazing. I love that. That green, yellow, red, and essentially all the yellow was AI. Mm-hmm. Anytime you use AI, it's in the yellow. That's in the be cautious, in the be slow category. Okay, Leona, this has been amazing. Thank you for your time. Do you have any final thoughts here for us? Anything to kind of wrap up our conversation?
I would share AI is powerful. It's really powerful. It can do some really incredible things. But we need to remember that it's not ultimate. It's not divine. It's not sentient. It does not have a soul. It can also offer us a lot of information, and it can organize that information in really cool ways. It can summarize it and synthesize it and make it really, really useful. But it's not wisdom, and it never will be wisdom. And then I guess I would say lastly, and this is where the caution for me comes in, especially around the companionship, is because when we engage with them, it feels so conversational. Like it can mimic empathy. It can mimic sympathy. And that's then what can pull us in as human beings. And then we want to humanize it. But it cannot love. And it will never be able to love. And so I think this is this call for us that it's in community that we learn to discern what leads towards love and peace and joy. And when I think about our mission as a church, what leads towards being here for the good of the city.
That's so good. Yeah, I'm hearing AI will never be what we truly need, right? No. It will never fulfill that desire for connection. For real connection, for purpose, both of which come from God, and so often through others, through each other's. Okay, this has been amazing, Leona. I really, really appreciate it. Thanks for being part of the conversation. Can we just wrap our time in a prayer? Let's do that. God, we're so grateful for your spirit here among us. We're so grateful that we can look to you when we are in need, when we're in trouble, or when we just don't know what to do next. And God, this can feel like a huge topic. This can feel like an uncertain future or provide hopelessness for us. And I just pray against that. I just pray that we could know and experience the living hope of you, of your Son, Jesus Christ, in our lives. And that this morning, we look to you for that. We look to you for that connection and for that real experience of what it means to be created in your image. We're grateful that we get to have these conversations and that we can do this together in community. It's in your name, Jesus, that we pray these things. Amen.